How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Harrison Fagan, a very tired Harrison Fagan. I'm a very tired Anthony Irwin. It was exit interview day for the Lakers, and for some just cruel reason, they decided to have all of them on the same day, just back to back to back.
You know, I think their intentions were good. I think they wanted us to get everything out of the way in one day and then not have to do anything on Friday.
Yeah, but sometimes you mangle things with the best intentions. Basically, the way today's show is going to work out, we're going to talk about the biggest story of the day, which was Pelinka and his thoughts on free agency and these things and a current. And he didn't mention Michelangelo this time, which I appreciate. And then after a quick break, we're going to talk about the effusive praise that Luke got, the effusive praise that Ingram got, how absent it felt like D'Angelo Russell might have been.
Who?
He's some guy that can't, like, people can't figure out what position he plays, I think.
Yeah, some bust.
And then Zubats and Mozgov apparently hate each other, so
that's how you get people to stay around for the D block.
So before we get to all of that goodness, make sure you're following the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you're using that Lakers promo code LOLAKERS to get your $20 off of your first purchase, $20 back from your first purchase. SeatGeek is the fastest and easiest way to buy tickets online. All right, Harrison, let's talk about Rob Pelinka. This was now the second time. Well, the third time if you count the Woj podcast, but this is the second time that he was in front of a group of reporters answering questions. He still continues to love to talk. He loves his Rubik's Cube analogy, but I think the number one thing that's going to grab everybody's
I'm not crazy, right? He used that in two separate interviews this week.
Oh yeah, he definitely did.
Like, how much time is Rob Pelinka spending on Rubik's Cubes? I think that's what we need to worry about here.
Well, the funny thing was that I think at the very end of I think it was Eric Pincus asked the question, but he kind of asked him like in jest, "Have you ever solved a Rubik's Cube?" And I don't know if Pelinka didn't actually hear the question or if he didn't hear the question, if you know what I mean.
Well, first thing, fun fact about Eric, huge Rubik's Cube fan. I hope he won't begrudge me revealing this on the podcast, but he is apparently very into Rubik's Cubes and very good at solving them. And so I think he probably wanted to see if, like, there was somebody on the beat that was now better than him. He was trying to gauge the competition.
Wait, is he actually?
But yeah, like, legitimately really good at Rubik's Cubes and like a huge fan of solving them.
Because I know there's an algorithm to going about solving it, right?
But like complicated ones and stuff, like different ones.
Wait, okay. I am new to the world of Rubik's Cubes.
I learned a lot.
but the thing that's going to catch everybody's attention was Pelinka saying a couple things. One, that he thinks the Lakers can still go after, you know, one or two potential all-stars. He thinks that the Lakers, you know, in time will be able to acquire that kind of talent. And as a, you know, that was part of a larger overriding point where he basically said that the current is changing for the Lakers. And I think you had an interesting way of going about this and asking if we agree with him that the current is actually changing. I have my own answer to this, but I've been talking way too much already. So do you think the current that the Lakers are currently in is changing? Are they going back in the right direction now?
It's really hard to say, and that's a boring answer, so I'll say it like this.
Yeah, I regret throwing it to you if that was going to be your answer.
That's not the end of it. That's not the only answer. What I would say is that I think it's really hard to judge that until we actually see evidence of it changing, right? Like, he can use all the Silicon Valley-esque wannabe terminology that he wants about currency, like currents changing and solving problems like Rubik's Cubes and having wellness professionals come in. But like, until something starts to actually change and you see tangible results from it, and I know that like we're both big process guys, but you don't really know that something's working until it actually has a tangible difference. And so are him and Magic going to give the Lakers better chances to sign free agents than
maybe
Mitch Kupchak and Jim Busted? It's hard to say. It's hard to predict that they'll be worse, it's also, it's not impossible that free agents continue to ignore the Lakers, despite all the nice things that we've heard about Pelinka as a recruiter of clients and Magic as just a general overall magnanimous human being that people want to be around and that apparently like wakes up at 3 and goes until 10 or 11 at night, according to Pelinka. But I just, all the stuff getting leaked about George and it being so – Paul George, to be clear, and it being so strong in the way that it's phrased makes me think that maybe things are changing a little bit, and like Lonzo Ball kind of openly trying to force his way to the Lakers. But both those guys are from Los Angeles, so there were always kind of going to be those rumors no matter who was in charge, I think. And so I'm not willing to say that the current is shifting until I feel it shift.
All right, so I'm going to go about answering this a different way. I actually do think the current is changing, but I don't think it has anything at all to do with the new administration, the new regime. The Lakers, as it currently stands, like it's not, they could not possibly get worse than it was last season. They literally could not. I mean, technically they could have won 16 games this year, but that was never going to happen, right?
Yeah,
what I was going to say,
the free agency thing.
Well, the free agency, like, yeah, we have to wait and see with that. But, like, even if the Lakers don't get a free agent, next year the Lakers are going to be better than they were this year.
No, but I just meant to go from 17 wins to no meeting with Kevin Durant and Lou Aldang and Timofey Mozgov.
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously a bad look. And you know, the whispers that you hear about whether or not, you know, anybody knew about the Mozgov signing until it actually happened. Like that's not really a good look either. But what I mean though is that like the Lakers were going to get better organically no matter what, right? And what I don't want to see here, because it's really easy nowadays to just crap on Jim, and it's really easy to just crap on Mitch because of the stories that are written about those guys. But at the end of the day, Mitch was a part of what? 5 championships? Was it more? Like he was an assistant GM for another 6 of them too, right? So he's been a part of 11 different championships with the Lakers. And you know, and that, I don't even think that's counting as a player, right? So I'm not quite ready to just kind of say, "Oh yeah, you know, thanks but no thanks and what have you done for me lately from that guy?" Because at the end of the day, the Lakers do have, I mean, we're going to talk about him in a second, but the way people talk about Brandon Ingram, like this guy could actually be a star. You know, he could be a late blooming star. Giannis, nobody knew what Giannis was going to be. But, you know, if Ingram turns out to be a star and he turns out to be an all-star, guess who's going to get credit for that? But he really shouldn't. You know, they really shouldn't.
Anthony, see, what you don't understand is that Magic came in and told him to be aggressive. So if he hadn't done that, who knows if Ingram would have figured it out.
Let's continue this on the other side of the break, because I think it's nowhere near, it's way too nuanced a topic to talk about for only 5 minutes. So let's talk really quickly about SeatGeek. SeatGeek, like I said earlier, is the fastest and easiest way to buy tickets online. They have the deal score. You love the price alerts. It's you know, you don't have, it's basically paperless, depending on where you're going. I don't know if Angel Stadium is still such that you need to have like an actual ticket in your hand to get in. If that is the case, then come on, Angels, like catch the heck up. But for the two teams that actually matter in Los Angeles, the Dodgers and the Lakers, you can get right in without having to print out a ticket. And for me, that's really important. It's Dodger season. So, and you're a relatively new baseball fan. So you and I are going to have to, you know, get some look, you're going to have to set a price alert and we're going to go to a Dodgers game, right?
Yeah, I'm more than happy to do that. Calling me a baseball fan, I would say, is a little strong, but I'm definitely excited to check out a Dodgers game with you, and I'm definitely excited to not pay that much for it on SeatGeek.
All right, so back to Palenka.
Yes.
Like I was saying, though, I do think that the current is shifting. I do think that the Lakers are going in the right direction. They hired the right coach, right? Like, that was a Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss move. For everybody who says that the Lakers haven't been able to get their guy, Luke Walton was the top candidate on the market last year, right?
One of them, for sure.
Well, I would say he's turned out better than the other ones.
Like, I mean, Scott Brooks worked out pretty well for Washington.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But
D'Antoni worked out pretty well for Houston. I mean, the Lakers were never going to hire D'Antoni, but...
No. But, like, Thibodeau, you know, was kind of choppy out there in Minnesota. They kind of underperformed. And then a couple years ago, like, do you think Stan Van Gundy's going to get fired?
I think I saw a report the other day that he was safe.
Oh, so he's got a year left.
Yeah, so he's going to get fired after a year. Yeah. Something like that.
But, you know, for those who say that, you know, they haven't been able to get their guy, Walton's their guy. And arguably, here's where people, I think, kind of overestimate and underestimate coaches. I think people overestimate the value of like a coach of the year. Excuse me. I think they overestimate, you know, the value of like a mediocre coach to a good coach, like the kind of coach that'll take a bad team to being okay, but can't really get further than that. Those guys are overrated. But the elite type of coaches who set a culture, who set a system in place that is sustainable over years on end. You know, the Popoviches come to mind. The Phil Jacksons come to mind, even though nowadays it's really easy to kind of poke fun at him because of the debacle that he's been out there in New York. But those kinds of coaches, if you get somebody like that, that's the top market inefficiency that you're going to find aside from maybe a brilliant executive, right? And with Luke, by getting him, that in and of itself was going to turn the tide for these guys. It's nice that they've developed a communication level with him. He seems like he was really involved in the exit interview process. He's going to be involved in the personnel process, it sounds like. Like, that stuff is really important. And for people to just kind of say, you know, maybe a year from now that, oh, look at the brilliant job they did. They turned the tide on the Lakers. It kind of sort of started with somehow turning a single lottery pick into Julius Randle, Larry Nance Jr., D'Angelo Russell, Brandon Ingram, Ivica Zubac, so on and so forth, Jordan Clarkson, and whatever they might be able to turn those guys into. Like, that all started years ago. And yes, last year was a low point of that process, but after hitting that low point, you were going to hit a change in direction anyway. And I thought him talking about like this alteration in the direction they were going in was a little cheap, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. I thought it was a little weird. It just, the whole thing came off a little used car salesman-esque to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's an agent.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's part of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it seemed disingenuous for him to be talking about this is the way that the Lakers do things, here's what the Lakers brand means, when like he just moved into his office like 2 weeks ago.
Well, he's been running the Lakers for 10 years, so.
That's a fair point.
And this isn't to say that, like, I want people listening right now.
I'm still optimistic about Palenka.
Yeah, this isn't us crapping on, you know, what the hires might have been, whatever. No, it's us just saying, hey,
the tone was a little weird.
Yeah, let's not, you know, count our chickens before they hatch here. Let's just slow it down a little bit. Let's see what they can actually do in an actual off season, and go on from there. I think that's a boring, albeit boring take, but I think it's the fairest one that you can give in regards to these guys.
I think it's pretty clear based on all the reporting done that he's a guy who knows his stuff about the cap and about recruiting and things like that. I'm not willing to say that the current has changed just because he's saying it's changed. I want to see it change.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. All right, so let's move on to a couple guys who I would say Luke was asked, like he was specifically asked about of all these guys, right? What did you think of Luke in his first year? What did you think of him compared to other coaches? The entire day, like I had so many people, I don't know if you had this in your mentions, but I had so many people in my mentions basically saying like hashtag 50 shades. Was this a 50 shades of shade thing? What are you going
to
say?
Yeah, like, basically for all of you, I did not have that today. Well, I wasn't checking my mentions a whole lot today because I wrote 15 articles, but I humble brag, but the whole day was a 50 shades of shade for every single player that played under the former coach.
Yeah.
From Tarik Black talking about how there were certain people that didn't believe in him and thought he wasn't an NBA player, and just saying over and over again that he's confident that he's an NBA player and that he's shown that he can be a helpful player in this league, and saying that Nick Young is the story of the season, to go from being on the bench to like playing a bunch, you know. The whole thing was an expert, like, shade throwing exhibition.
Yeah, I would. The entire exit interview process was a 50. We'll just say it was a 50.
Yeah, there were. We'll go double 50. There are keeping it 100.
Oh, there you go. Well done. See, that's how the kids talk. But so we'll start with Luke, and he was asked specifically about and. Not a single person really had a negative thing to say about him. Now, a lot of it, I would say, was probably, you know, you don't want to trash the guy who... Luke is the face of the franchise right now, right? I think that's fair to say.
You don't think it's Zubats yet?
not quite.
Okay.
But you aren't going to... It's like, you know, people wouldn't say a negative thing about Kobe while they were Lakers or while they wanted to remain Lakers. Nobody's going to say a negative thing about Luke if they want to remain a Laker right now, right? So that's the cynical part. That's a cynical way to look at this, but that's definitely going on, I would imagine.
Well, that's true. And some of the guys praising him, I think it almost goes both ways. Of course, you're not, because they were kind of on the fringe of the roster, mm-hmm. like guys like Ennis and things like that. Like, of course, you're going to praise the coach who's going to have a large say in whether or not you're back. Mm-hmm. But I also think at the same time, like, Ennis has a legitimate reason to be grateful to Luke.
Yeah.
And like, he said Luke kind of saved his career.
Yeah. Well, he said that this was the first legitimate shot that he's had in the NBA, right? This was the first fair shot that he's gotten. I did want to point out a couple things that it...
Can we do really quickly a retraction on Tyler Ennis? Like, I don't feel like he's the worst player I've watched anymore.
You can retract it.
All right. Well, the game that you called him on it, that was one of the worst games I've ever seen anyone play for the Lakers. But down the stretch of the season, he was okay. Like, I'm not saying he should be the Lakers' primary backup point guard, but he's no longer the worst point guard I've watched play for the Lakers.
Do you want to see him back next year?
If he's like the third guard, yeah, sure. Because at least you're giving it to a semi-young guy instead of like the catalyst.
Now, I believe I saw somewhere, and, you know, if there are smarter people listening to us, feel free to call me out on this, but I think I saw somewhere that the most the Lakers can offer him without cutting into their cap space is $2.21 million.
Yeah, it's something like that, but why would another team offer him more than that?
Dude, you always get the Lakers bump. Always get the Lakers bump.
Like, that's, I guess, how that works. Well, Tyler Ennis will be able to afford plenty of t-shirts to wear under his jersey.
Like,
then.
If I was Tyler Ennis's agent, and Tyler, if you want to hire me, fine. But
yeah, hey, we'll do it. We'll do it for 5%.
but Tyler orchestrated the Lakers' longest winning streak in 3 years. Like, Tyler was a part of that. He got
He's
there.
The true point guard they needed.
There you go. So, but you know, he. I don't. Here's the thing. I saw what I'm going to see from Tyler. I don't think his three-point shooting when he was shooting the ball really well is sustainable.
You shot almost 39% in 22 games with the Lakers from three.
I don't think that's sustainable.
I think he might be the new Kyle Korver.
But
no, not really. Not really.
I would much rather, because I think at this point, too, because I don't even know. I think he was relatively old when he came out. I'd like to look up. Could you look up his age really quick?
And yeah, I got you.
But if he's like in that 22, 23, 24 range, then I feel like you can get somebody.
He's 22.
So you can get somebody with a little bit more upside in that, you know, 20-ish range, right? 20, 21-year-old. If there's a point guard out there who, or if there's a point guard out there, like the Jazz have a really weird relationship with Dante Exum. If they decide after if they lose to the Clippers in the first round, and they decide that, okay, yeah, we're going to see what we can test the waters here with Dante, and if the Lakers can kind of take him on as part of a three-team deal, like that's the ideal scenario here, right? Because you get somebody with a little bit more upside than, and I'm biased here because I hate the way Syracuse plays basketball. I don't think you're going to get very many good NBA players from a school that just plays 2-3 zone. You know, and relies on a coach calling a set every time down the court.
Okay, so three things. Number one, David Locke, our boss, if you're listening to this, I just want to say Anthony said the Jazz were going to lose in the first round. That was not me.
I said if.
I don't know. I think you said that. I think we could check the tape. But right. Second, I'm definitely not arguing that they should go all out to retain Tyler Ennis. I'm just saying, like, if he at the right price, I wouldn't mind him back as like a third or fourth guard.
Mm-hmm.
And third, I thought it was hilarious when he was blaming Mark Medina for all of the beat hating Syracuse.
Man, like Syracuse, I love Mark, but Syracuse plays a cowardly way. Like they're cowards. That's how they play defense.
Oh man, zone's the worst. I don't want to watch zone. Get zone out of here.
Dude, I would love it if college basketball put their foot down and actually all of basketball. If they just outlawed zone across all of basketball, it would improve the talent levels of everybody playing basketball from grade school up. Like that's just the domino effect would be tremendous. But anywho.
How did we get here? I think we were talking about Luke and all of the guys liking him.
Yeah. The other thing that I really liked, you know, he Randall touched on this. Robinson touched on this. Just about everybody touched on the communication skills that Luke showcased in this 1 year. It goes without saying, like, it's easy to look back at the last coach and say, that guy, that's how you don't communicate, right? Where he literally did not communicate.
Yeah.
Like you look at that and you say, okay, just don't do that. But really there are nuances. There are complexities to trying to communicate across an NBA roster where you have guys from, you had a Russian, you had a guy from Croatia, you had guys from Syracuse, you had guys that you acquired midseason, you had guys who were considered draft busts. You had all these different backgrounds, right? And Luke has to figure out a way to communicate with each and every single one of those guys to be able to get the most that he possibly can get from them. And it says a lot about his ability to do that, that just about everybody who was asked today pointed to his communication skills and being able to relay a message to guys with different backgrounds.
And I thought what Luke said about it was really interesting in that he said, you know, his goal is not just to have everybody like him just so that he can be liked, but he wants the guys to understand that he cares about them so that when he does yell at them, he does get on them, that they know it's from that it's not because he's angry with them or because he doesn't like them, that it's he's trying to help them be better.
Right. And I would
and I think that does help. I think that would help. That would certainly help me. I know as a person, if I'm getting yelled at by somebody who I know cares and wants the best for me, I know I'm going to respond to it a lot better than somebody who I just think is being an ass.
Do better, Harrison. I said that because I care.
Thanks, Anthony. Yeah. I appreciate that.
But I do think, though. Like, I smiled outright. Like, I smiled like a dummy when he said that. When he said that, he wants to be, like, not for his own self-esteem or not for his own self-confidence, but because he wants people to not dread coming into the gym. Like, that was just That's what you want to hear from a coach. And that's why
that's an 150 shades of shade.
Yeah, I completely agree. So Luke deserved
Dread coming into the gym. I think that was the Lakers, like, instead of I love basketball, I think that was what they yelled to end timeouts.
Yeah. I mean, we've all had those jobs, right? Where as you're walking into work, you're saying, God, man, this is not going to end well.
Yeah. You every time I record this podcast, as it happens.
Well, good thing you're being replaced. Anywho, let's go ahead and move on to Brandon Ingram, who was, I think this is a little bit different. Now, he was asked about, occasionally. I thought it was more of the follow-up variety of questions when he was asked about specifically.
But in my opinion, it was about 50-50, but I'm willing to, like, I don't feel super strongly about that.
I the way I would put it was...
I also was very busy transcribing, so I acknowledge that I did not hear every question.
I would probably go out on a limb and say I heard more questions than you did today.
Probably.
Yeah. And here's how it usually played out when Ingram was asked about in particular, because not all the Lakers are going to be very verbose, right? So you had some guys kind of sit down, they would be asked about progress on the season, they'd say, yeah, we all showed some, and then you get the follow-up to see if they can get a little bit more out of the player, and usually if there was a follow-up, it was in regards to Ingram, and I think it was in regards to Ingram because the improvement was so obviously there.
That's what I was going to say too, is like, who else are they supposed to point to that so obviously improved? Because Ingram, just like I never like gave up on him or anything, but my God, was he awful in the first half of the season on offense.
Yeah,
for the most part, like, he showed little flashes, but for the most part he was really bad. And to go from that to like the guy that he was in the last 15 games of the season, that was huge growth, and it would jump out at anyone.
Yeah, and I thought the other thing too, that because it's one thing when people kind of, you see a player kind of put things together on the court, right? And that's something that we can watch from the outside looking in. But these guys see somebody working his tail off night in, night out, day in, day out, taking shots after practice, getting there early, watching video, whatever it might take to improve. All of these guys, whenever it was asked of Ingram, what sparked his improvement, it was either confidence or, well, this kid just worked his ass off. And
yeah, and Ingram himself credited it to watching tape over the All-Star break and just deciding to be more aggressive.
Yeah. And as it was going on, and we'll let this segue into the next part of the conversation, but as it was going on, I think just last show, right, you asked me who was untouchable or who was the least touchable player on the Lakers roster.
Yes.
I believe I said Russell, right?
Yeah.
I felt myself starting to get swayed, and it was because of all the praise that Ingram got. It was because of the pretty, I wouldn't say astronomical, but pretty sizable, noticeable leap that he took forward at the end of the year, and also because of everything that he could offer on the court. Like, I felt myself getting swayed, and now part of this, Damen Rangoul, a friend of the show, kind of, lofted the question out there and kind of repeated it, where he asked, he just kind of said, I feel, D'Angelo Russell feels very absent. He feels very non-present here. And, I think there's some confirmation bias because he literally was not there.
Yeah, I was going to say, can I address that really quickly? Like, first of all, he wasn't there. So he probably should have felt a little absent.
Yeah.
And second of all, the analogy that I would make, and this is a weird one, but stay with me, is like if you and I had a coworker and you were asked at the end of the year which one of us improved more on the podcast. And like, if in the first half of the year I was walking around punching you in the face and stuttering every single time we went on air, and the other guy was just kind of like not doing that great of a job, and then in the second half of the year, like, he did a better job, and like, I stopped punching you in the face and stopped like insulting you and got better at podcasting, you'd notice my improvement more. Yeah. And so I'd say like there was more improvement to notice with Ingram.
Yeah. And the other thing too that occurs with the confirmation, like, here's how I don't have any experience in you know, holding exit interviews, but in a string of interviews like this, you start noticing a trend, right? And I think reporters start noticing a trend too, where they know that the well is there to go to when it comes to guys talking about Ingram. So they kind of just keep going to that well. And you only have a limited amount of time when you're asking about these guys. So, yes, it's easy to ask a question about Ingram and kind of know what kind of answer you're going to get back versus trying out a question about D'Angelo Russell where you don't necessarily know which kind of answer you're going to get back. And now you wasted, you know, 2-3 minutes of only 10 minutes of interview time with this guy.
Well, and on the Russell thing, like the only guy who really got asked about him was Nance, and he waxed poetic for 3 minutes about how he thinks that people don't understand that D'Angelo Russell's just confident and that he likes playing with him. And now it's Nance, so I don't think he's going to say a bad thing about anyone. But still, like, I just think to some degree the guys were thinking more about basketball with Ingram, and I think D'Angelo Russell's basketball abilities are probably less on their minds right now than like how he's doing as a human. And so I don't say this to just like cover for D'Angelo Russell or something, but I do think that there are real tangible reasons why Brandon Ingram got so much more praise than he did today.
Yeah. I mean, he's been away for what, 4 days from the team?
Yeah, he left. He hit the game winner on Sunday, and then I believe he left Monday.
Yeah, so he has not been around the team for almost 4 days, and yeah, he, you know, what's the old cliche where whatever it is, I'm old, but we'll have to cut that one out. the last point I wanted to make on Russell. And it kind of goes back to Ingram here, and this is why I grouped the two guys together, is that for some reason, because of how Twitter works and because of how we analyze basketball, it's very evident in the MVP race right now, where if I say I'm going to vote for Russ, I therefore hate Harden and or Kawhi, right? If I say I'm going to vote for LeBron, I therefore hate everybody else who's involved in this thing. And I don't know when that started or whatever, but you started to see it here with the Brandon Ingram, D'Angelo Russell thing, where I think we actually asked the question on Silver Screen and Roll's Twitter, where we said, if there was one guy who you had to keep, who would you keep? And the two names who kept coming up were D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram. And somehow that became those two became mutually exclusive, right? The hypothetical became somehow a self-fulfilling prophecy that now actually the Lakers are going to trade one of those guys, where that isn't the case. Like, neither of those guys necessarily have to get traded. And I would take it so far as to say that I don't think either of those guys are going to get traded, right? And at some point, I hope we kind of, you know, shift back to utilizing a little bit more nuance and saying, I can think Brandon Ingram showed more improvement while also noting that D'Angelo Russell himself showed improvement. I can think...
Yeah, it turns out more than one player can be good.
It's crazy. I can think that, remember last year, this is how it played out with Larry Nance Jr. and Julius Randle, right? Where I said, I think Larry Nance Jr. fits the starting five a little bit better. And then I got all year that I was a Julius Randle hater, right?
And, you know, you aren't a Julius Randle hater?
I should probably change my Twitter avatar. but yeah, I wanted to pair Ingram and D'Angelo Russell here just to make sure to point out that both those guys can be good. Both those guys can have
it would be very ideal for the Lakers if both of them were good.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, having a point guard wing combination is pretty important in the NBA.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Those are two pretty vital positions, and there's no guarantee. Like, people are just kind of writing it off as if Lonzo Ball is going to step in and automatically be better than D'Angelo Russell. There's a scenario where he isn't, right? And the Lakers trade away D'Angelo Russell because, you know, the opportunity comes up where they should trade him. And then Russell winds up being a better player anyway than Lonzo Ball. And then we're sitting back here from square one saying, I wish we would have maybe thought a little bit more deeply than one guy improved, the other guy had to have sucked.
Yeah, and like just to be clear, that's a totally hypothetical scenario that Anthony's throwing out there, because it would require the Lakers to keep their pick, which they probably aren't going to do.
Yeah. All right. I don't even have any wood to knock on around me. But
no, I mean, hey, it's literally more likely than not that they don't.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Last thing that we're going to get to about these exit interviews, and we'll send everybody out on their weekends. I for sure, Harrison, how much are you looking forward to a weekend where we just kind of get to kick it a little bit?
I don't think I know what to do. Do I just like, does TweetDeck stop working?
I'm probably going to try to stay off of Twitter completely over the next 2 days. Just not.
You should probably check in on me, because I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
I'm going to get back and I'm going to find out. I have to find a new host, because you literally, like, you were sitting in a corner just repeating, I need to write.
Like, yeah, we had to fire Harrison because he started blogging about the Lakers 2009 season that they were reshowing on NBA TV and, like, was treating it like it was current news.
All right, last tidbit here before we get to this extraordinary weekend that we're about to enjoy. Zubats and Mozgov had, and here's the thing, you pointed to this before we went on the air. Neither of those guys' native tongue is English, so yeah. There could be a lot that gets lost in translation between those two. But basically, the way it played out was Timofey Mozgov was asked, "Do you see yourself starting next year with the Lakers?" Right, and then the follow up to that was, "Well, what about Zubats? What about what he showed?" And I don't have the exact quote, but I don't think the exact quote would necessarily do Mozgov any good in this situation.
He was just very frank, and he said, I think he said that he doesn't think Zubats is a starter yet.
Well, yeah, he said that he anticipates being the starter next year, which he was just signed to a huge deal, right?
And I don't think Zu is ready to be starting.
Yeah, well, and I also, and he said that it's a little different to be, you know, to become a starter than to enter the year as a starting center.
Yes.
Right, and I think there's truth to what he said.
Yeah, I don't know that what we saw from Zubats is the starting center on a good team yet, and that should be expected. He's 19. He was going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But I do think that he showed a lot of promise, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was the starting center going into next year.
And here's the other thing, and I mean, the stats might, the people might yell at me and point stats out to me or whatever, but I never got the sense that Mozgov was outright bad. Like, I never felt, like, this year there were multiple times where I said to myself, Luol Deng actually might be bad at basketball now. Like, his days of being a good basketball player might be behind him. Whereas I thought, I mean, Mozgov is still really big. You can still put him in the middle of the key, and I think he's
still... For whatever it's worth, the Lakers were far worse with Mozgov on the floor than Deng.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, like I said...
They were outscored by 9.2 points per 100 possessions with Mozgov and 6.4 with Deng.
That's not that much worse, but...
I mean, that's a significant difference. That's the difference between... The Golden State Warriors and the... Actually, that's bigger than the difference between the Warriors and the Spurs. That's like... That's the difference between...
Warriors and Rockets?
Warriors. Like the Raptors and the Heat.
Oh. All right. That's a good way to put it. But the other thing, too, that I was going to say about Mozgov, and I guess it applies to Deng, too, is that neither guy was ever in... an ideal situation here, right? Like both.
They got a lot of heat because they're veterans and it's easier to hate on them than the rookies for making mistakes, mm-hmm. because they just kind of are what they are. And, but like they were not the reason the Lakers were so bad this year. And they also weren't like by sitting that they were like bad enough that by sitting them, the Lakers weren't necessarily making themselves a better tank or something.
Yeah. Here's how I kind of put it. Luke Walton was a first-year coach for everybody on the roster. This was the first year that anybody on the roster was running this this new system, both offensively and defensively. And offensively, Mozgov being a recipient-type player, he's going to grow only as quickly in the system as the guy who's getting him the ball in pick-and-roll situations is going to grow, right? defensively, he's going to be much worse. It's going to be a lot harder for him to be a productive player defensively, while guys are getting straight line drives to the basket. So I don't think at any point this year you could look at, you know, the situation that Mozgov was put in. And now this applies to all of the bigs, right? But I don't think it's necessarily fair to write Mozgov off completely based off of what we saw this year.
I also don't think that it's fair to expect a huge bounce back. I think it's somewhere in the middle.
I don't think, a bounce back is probably out of the question, but I don't think we're going to see a precipitous fall. I think next year he's going to be okay. I think it's fine.
I think he'll start the year again, probably.
Yeah, he's probably a better player than Zubats right now. he's just all around, probably. It's not by much. I'm not going to go off and say that, you know, if he's a 10, Zubats is like a 5. It's like a 7.5 versus a 7. You know?
Yeah, something like that.
For Luke, in a locker room, you know, again, it's about managing the locker room. You want to see if, because he was very obviously frustrated in his interview today. You know, anytime it was brought up, you know, what was it like? How did you handle, you know, sitting the last, you know, month or whatever of the year? He all but said that effing blue, guys.
Yeah, I mean, he said, I'm the kind of guy who likes to play basketball. I think it will change. I got a feeling.
Yeah, and you know, he said that he's going to do a lot of the same things. He wants to get better at a few things. We can only hope. But I think he's going to be okay next year. Now, I do want to hit on Zubats, though, because, again, Zubats does have quite a bit of confidence to him, right?
Oh, yes.
And he put it out as, like, he's looking forward to the positional battle in, you know.
Well, he was asked, like, what it meant to him for Luke Walton to give him the starting spot or something along those lines.
Uh-huh.
And he just, like, he cut off the question and was like, I earned my opportunity. I know I can start.
Yeah. I like the kid, you know.
No, and, hey, everybody should be that confident.
Well, it depends. Like, fat guy wearing tight leather pants should not be that confident.
No, man. You do you. You be confident yourself. Have high self-esteem.
I'm only saying this because I bought some leather pants the other day.
Oh, that was a hypothetical? You weren't talking about your... Oh, my
God. No, that was not a hypothetical. It actually happened. No, but we... I can't wait to hearing stories about the positional battle that those guys are going to go through in training camp and as the year goes along. I think we're actually going to – we might hear about those guys coming to blows. And I don't mean it like they don't like each other coming to blows, just guys who – if one guy is getting minutes, the other guy can't be. This isn't like a couple of wings who, you know, if Luol Deng and Brandon Ingram are competing for minutes, those guys could theoretically play together. Mozgov and Zubats cannot play together, and neither of those guys look like
no way.
Yeah, neither of those guys look like they have any kind of back down in them. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, that's going to be that's definitely going to be like a physical training camp battle for sure.
Especially given the positions they play too.
And that Zubats is going to get better through doing that. Like Mozgov, for all of his faults, he's a good post up defender.
Yeah. And
like,
I think,
and that's Zubats's, like, that's a big part of Zubats's game right now. And so he's going to get better. They're going to get better from going at each other.
Yeah, there's a very realistic scenario here where the best case of Zubats getting better and Mozgov kind of becoming a 10 to 15 minute, you know, reliable big off the bench. Like that I can see that happening because of the positional battle.
I don't know that both of them will ever be even in the rotation at the same time, because I think Luke likes so much to go to that smaller lineup off mm-hmm. the bench that and likes to play small. I don't know if he'll ever have 2 7-footers in the rotation, at least not with like their type of skill sets.
Yeah, we'll see. Mozgov thinks he's quick enough to guard guys off of the dribble. So.
Zubat said that that's where he wants to get this summer. So they're going to have a quickness off in training camp. They're just gonna do lateral sprints for the starting lineup gig.
We're gonna hear about 40 times. Like they're gonna tweet out their own. Mozgov doesn't have a Twitter, but he's gonna get a Twitter just to tweet out that he beat Zubats in like suicides one day.
Also, like, great things, underrated things, just real quick, as long as we're rounding this up.
Yeah.
Zubats talking about Los Angeles traffic. I encourage you guys to go and look up his exit interview, because that was not the first time I've heard him bemoan that. He is very much not a fan of the traffic in the city. But it was kind of fun to listen to him talk about, like, how he likes to make people happy by giving them autographs.
He's so adorable.
And it makes him feel happy inside.
And
then he also said that, you know, you said that you really liked his confidence. He said that the front office specifically told him that his attitude and confidence, they love it.
Yeah.
So either he just went off and, like, told the media that, or they actually told him that.
other couple last notes here. One, Tarik Black is going to, like, he's going to do something really good after basketball.
Like, yeah, he's going to be like president or something.
That guy, I could listen to that guy read the dictionary.
The thing about Tarik is that he is just really thoughtful when you ask a question. Like, he actually takes time. Like, he's not going to give you the cliche. Like, he thinks about it for a second and then gives you his actual opinion. Like, I don't even always do that when you ask me questions.
No, I almost never do. The other one here was, I think, Corey Brewer. For those of you who, you know, kind of bemoaned taking money back in the Calderon, the Lou Williams trade.
Lou Williams.
For those of you who bemoaned taking money back in the form of Corey Brewer, he sounds like somebody who, if he wants to be, he could be a coach after this. I think he actually fits really well with Luke Walton, because he harps a lot on positivity, and he said that, you know, he's such a positive guy that when he does criticize, you know, you probably effed up. He was very engaging as well. So,
He's the type of guy that's like just a hustler that's good to have around younger players who just goes 100%, 100% of the time.
I joked that he sprinted to the podium today on Twitter. Would it shock you? Like, he like dove into the.
I didn't see him go up, so I just assumed that that's what happened. You've been in the Lakers media room. I assumed he just dove through that glass window from the practice facility.
Yeah.
Like, just straight up just crashed through it. Because I think Corey Brewer, just that he seems like the type of guy that would do that.
Yeah.
They'd be like, all right, Brewer, it's time. Where's Brewer? And like, all of a sudden you just hear the glass shatter. And Corey Brewer just like dove headfirst through it and like landed at the table.
Yeah, I want to get Tarik and I want to get Brewer on a podcast at some point.
We'll get them their own podcast.
Oh, that would be a good one. That would be a really Brewer and Black.
All right. Well, no, we'll cut this. We don't want to give them any ideas to knock us off the map.
All right. That does it for this one. We went a little bit longer on this one because we're sending everybody into the
weekend.
Because
we love you guys and we wanted to wrap up the season right.
Yeah. We are going to, when we come back, this next week is going to be a pretty bananas week in terms of shows. I'm not going to give
anything
away.
Let's make sure that we actually get the guests. We actually end up recording with them, because this has happened to us before. Mm-hmm. But we have some pretty dynamite guests lined up for next week.
Yeah, so and we're going to try to keep that rolling on throughout the entire off season. The nice thing is, you know, we, fortunately, depending on how much you like our voices, we aren't going to be recording every day like we said yesterday's podcast.
We didn't say every day. We didn't say every day.
I know. What are we going
to? Oh, I get what you mean.
But because we aren't recording every day, that gives us a little bit more time to book guests in between those shows. So we're going to keep it entertaining with that as well. So,
and it'll also, like, throughout the off season, it'll allow us to be better, because there's not as much Lakers stuff to talk about. So we won't have you know how, like, when you watch a non-Netflix show that's like 22 episodes and like episodes like 14 through 17 are just filler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't want to have any of those episodes locked on Lakers. And so this will allow us to not do that. So we're going to be going to Monday, Wednesday, Friday for the next month.
I wouldn't specify non-Netflix shows, because the entire season of The Iron Fist was filler.
Okay, well, that's just a bad show. I mean, in general, Netflix shows are very tightly paced and every episode matters.
Yep, I would agree. So enjoy your weekends, everybody. Harrison and I will definitely enjoy our weekends. We'll be back at it again next week. Be safe out there. We made it through a Lakers season. We're going to make it through a Lakers off season. Keep knocking on wood. Keep going over to Tankathon to test the Lakers lottery odds. Keep sending us. We got a couple emails at Lakers, LakersLockedOn@gmail.com. We got a couple emails already for show ideas and show topic ideas. Thank you for those of you who sent those. If you want to send them via show rating, that's an even better way to show it. Just we prefer that they come with a 5-star rating as well.
That's what we're going to do. Give us a 5-star rating. Let us know what you want us to talk about, and we'll make it happen.
Absolutely. Make sure you're following the show, as always, on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers to get $20 back off of your first purchase. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us through the season. Have a good one.
We love you guys.
Progressive presents Mind Flowness with Flo.
Before you lies a beautiful meadow. In that meadow, Progressive Direct has placed its auto insurance rates alongside those of competitors. You select the lowest rate and feel a great sense of calm. A great sense of...
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates so you can rest easy. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.